A place to lay one's head. They hustled down the streets of Janduri, Tayagum leading the way. Kavik's eyes were too blurry to make anything out, but he could hear the shouts of the famed city hawkers offering morsels of food cooked to order right there in the open stalls. The clamor of dry goods pitchmen demonstrating the durability of their iron wares by bashing the metal together. When they passed a square full of indistinct hollering, he thought they'd stumbled across a riot of the Bin-Ur sort. But Tayagum said it was the clearing exchange, where merchants shouted orders at each other in a great crowd, using eye contact and hand gestures to move sums equal to pounds of gold at a time. Kavik was missing the sights, but he didn't much care. He wasn't in Janduri to play tourist. They moved up bouncing bamboo steps into a house on stilts. Tayagum gave him a place to sit and dripped to his heart's content. When the flow from his nose staunched to the point where he could see again, he discovered he was in the common room of an inn. A water tribe-owned inn. There was a large soapstone kulik in the middle of the floor, providing smokeless light. While the room was too big to be completely lined with pelts, there were a few fine examples around the walls and floor. His house in Bin-Ur looked like this, an effort to bring home outside the poles.
"I'll leave you in Akudan's care for now," said Tayagum. "I have to smooth things over at the dock. I'll be back."
He left before Kavik could ask who Akudan was. Presumably it was the giant who came plodding down the stairs. Kavik was surprised the second floor could hold him.
"What the? Tayagum?"
the huge southern man roared.
"Get back here."
"He's gone," Kavik said.
"You're Akudan?" "I am,"
Akudan sighed.
"And you are a mess. I can bone set. Sit tight."
Akudan went behind a counter. As he picked through his shelves, Kavik saw he had only one arm. But it was bigger around than some people's legs. He brought over a leather roll and undid the knot with his teeth, unfurling a series of pouches, each with a different smooth, polished wooden instrument poking out. He selected a wishbone-shaped splint and two rods the size of brush handles.
"Hold this curved one against your cheekbones," he said to Kavik. "This is going to hurt."
Without further warning, Akudan jammed the rods deep into Kavik's nostrils to realign his breathing passages. "Ah, blinding pain, his old friend." "It's been a long morning," Kavik said, seeking the floor to lie down on while the setting implements remained attached to his face. "Do you mind if I close my eyes? Just for a minute?"
"Go wild. Take two."
When Kavik woke up from his nap, he found pelts underneath him and a protective mask strapped to his head, shielding his nose from further injury. And Tayagum was back. He chatted quietly with Akudan by the lamp, the two older water tribesmen occasionally glancing over at their guest. Kavik struggled to his elbows. The swelling had gone down in his face, which was now clean and a little cold. Tayagum must have washed him off and applied ice with water bending while he was passed out. Maybe some basic field healing, too? But nothing on the level of the Avatar's miraculous touch. He could breathe well enough to smell something delicious.
"Blood soup," Akudan said to Kavik. "To replace what you've lost. I also cooked seaweed noodles, and Tayagum picked up a chunk of turtle seal. Still fresh. Taken properly, thanked by the hunter, and given a drink."
Kavik swallowed his saliva.
"How do you have fresh seal meat this far away from the poles?"
"Janduri likes two things above all else," Tayagum said. "Order and food. A lot of the exchange traders are tribe who are willing to pay for a taste of home.
The one thing about the Shang territories was they were cosmopolitan. Kavik found the soup as hearty as any he'd had back home. The noodles as good as his mother's, he was loath to admit. The meat was cut from the backbone, a prime morsel, usually chosen quickly following a successful hunt. Because of how delicious the meal was, it took Kavik a while to notice they'd been eating in complete silence. "Business seems a little slow," he said. A joke. The inn was empty, even though the street outside had sounded busy. "This assistant I replaced on the way in? He doesn't live here?" They grunted, but didn't respond beyond that. Tayagum's initial friendliness from the boat had vanished. The standoffishness hurt Kavik more than he wanted to let on. These were the first water tribe folk he'd met since he'd moved to Bin-Ur, who weren't upset with him over his brother's dealings. He took a minute to observe his hosts. A series of small blue discs hung from a band around Akudan's arm. Tayagum had a similar piece of fabric wrapped around his bicep, but with only one carved amulet hanging from it.
"So, are you two former Northern Guard?" Kavik asked. "Thin Claws, maybe, to be so far from home?"
He was referring to the elite warrior retainers of Agna Kala, granted the status of brethren to the chief himself. When they weren't stationed in the poles, they served as scouts and rangers, who patrolled farther away from the Water Tribe homelands. Tayagum snorted.
"What?" Kavik said.
"You both look like you can scrap. At least, one of you has been to the continent a long time ago."
His pickup man may have been justified in giving Kavik grief over security, but he'd let slip facts about himself as well.
Akudan shook his head. "Don't do that," he said.
"What? Pry? Learn? What do you think my job is?"
"I'm just speculating,"
Kavik said, turning his attention to the big man.
"For instance, unless you lost your limb in an accident, I'm thinking you might be related to royalty. An offshoot branch of the clan, maybe?"
The northern chief's lineage had at least one notable ancestor born with one arm. A legendary whaler, in fact.
"You're annoying, is what you are,"
Tayagum said.
"And unvetted. Neither of us enjoy having to support walking liabilities."
So it was going to be like that. Kavik hadn't even briefed them on the mission yet.
"I'm the person the Avatar chose."
"I know," Akudan said. "And I'm saying she may have made a mistake. She looks for the good in people first. She wants to find it in them with all of her heart. She's too trusting."
Kavik shook his head in disbelief.
"Are we talking about the same Avatar here? Yang Chen spies on people? Owns disguises and is really comfortable using them? The most un-air-nomad air-nomad to ever exist?"
Tayagum's nostrils flared and Akudan's lips pressed into thin lines. Clearly they didn't like Kavik speaking about their boss in anything less than a reverent tone.
"Look, she and I struck a deal," he said. "I need her to come through on her end, and she needs me in return. I don't see why the two of you get to look down on me for it."
Akudan examined Kavik like a jeweler, determined to reject a stone.
"Do kids these days know about the Platinum Affair?"
he asked after a lengthy consideration. "Do I know about the circumstances that trapped my family in a city I hate, led to losing my brother and brought me halfway across the world?"
"I know some."
"Tayagum and I were expedition quartermasters during that time," Akudan said. "We were escorting the Water Tribe's payment to General Nong under diplomatic pretenses. The Earth King's forces at Lama Paka's Crossing ran us down along with the platinum we were guarding. The Water Tribe ambassadors couldn't get us released right away. Eventually, they stopped trying.
We were disavowed by Oyuluk,
Tayagum said bitterly.
Maybe as punishment for failing to protect the money. Maybe to save face. But either way, we were thrown into an Earth Kingdom prison to rot. We would still be there if the Avatar hadn't negotiated amnesty for us. No one asked her to. She took it upon herself.
So we don't follow her out of a deal,
Akudan said.
Nor because she's the bridge between humans and spirits. We follow her because she's a person who will help others without question.
Ah, Kavik nodded. They were true believers. Or maybe they were just indebted. Did she attend your wedding as well? Or were you already together before the Platinum affair?
Both men peered at him.
You're wearing what I assume are betrothal armbands, Kavik said.
If he was correct, they'd modified the traditional custom of giving a hand-carved necklace to your promised.
The only thing I don't get is why Akudan's has so many stones on it.
Akudan broke out into a grin, the first real and warm expression he'd shown in front of Kavik.
We met before. Dum-Dum here kept messing up the stone he was going to use. But I made him fish all of his failed attempts out of the rubbish. You can see a little progression of him getting better each time.
Tayagum leaned over and pressed his nose against his husband's cheek.
The one you made looked great on the first try.
They finished their meal and cleared the dishes. Over herb tea, Kavik briefed his hosts on Yang Chen's plan for him in Jandiri. Despite the loyalty to the Avatar they'd professed earlier, they were far from enthusiastic.
All right. She definitely made a mistake,
Akudan said, rubbing his temples with his thumb and little finger.
This is madness. You're going to get yourself killed.
I've been caught snooping around warehouses and docks before, Kavik said.
Most often, one Shang would want to spy on another's assets before entering a deal, or breaking one. More information meant more leverage.
Usually I get the snot kicked out of me and sent on my way.
Huh, Tayugum said.
Never heard someone boast about losing fights.
There were few other ways for the son of accountants to learn the trade. The standard cost against benefit calculations applied to any physical confrontation in Bin Er. Tayin had paid a squad of head kickers because he could get away with it as long as no one died.
Bin Er is not Jandiri, Akudan said. And while they both hold the title of Zhongdu, Hensha is to Chaisi what a moose lion cub is to its full-grown version. If the Avatar trifles with her, comes at her with the wrong tools, it's going to be a disaster.
Why is Chaisi such bad news?
Her grip over the Shangs in Jandiri is absolute, Tayugum explained. They do business exactly as she tells them. She keeps the Fire Lord out of their hair, and everyone reaps massive profits. She's the most effective leader they've had since the system began.
She also controls the flow of intelligence on the island,
Akudan said.
Every errant runner in Jandiri works for her as a member of a single association. They monitor the residents who might be a threat to her smooth operations. Merchants, workers, anyone who doesn't like the way she runs things. There is no class of independent agent like you who could be persuaded to turn against her interests.
The two formidable-looking men, who had definitely seen their share of trouble, were talking about Chaisi like a spirit that brought bad luck. The kind that taboos were put in place around for one's own protection.
The Avatar's meeting with her, face to face, Kavik said.
They hitched with worry.
If it's entirely above ground, about legitimate business, then she should be okay,
Tayugum said.
Is the Avatar going to come here afterward, before you march off to your doom?
That was the plan, Kavik nodded.
Good, Akudan said. We'll have a chance to talk her out of this.
Maybe she'll talk you into it.
While the men obviously revered young Chen, Kavik could see why she might have been hesitant to act through them. They were focused on the cost, not the benefit.
Don't give us that look, Tayugum said. We've been playing the game far longer than you. Professionals know when the risk is too great.
If Kavik wanted to play it safe, then he wouldn't be here right now.
Oh yeah? Then tell me which of you very serious professionals will break your assistant's nose tomorrow.
They were confused. Kavik pointed at his own face.
To match me. If Lee sees your man show up at the docks in pristine condition, he'll know it was someone else who came back on the boat today.
There was a long moment of silence before the three of them cracked up laughing. Kavik couldn't stop. His sides hurt more than his nose. The idea of some poor sap getting walloped for something he wasn't a part of was completely unfair, which was probably why it was so funny. Suddenly, Akudan went quiet.
I'll do it, he growled, slamming a fist the size of a brick on the table, upsetting the tea.
A Meeting of Minds. After Yang Chen dropped Kavik off in the water, his squeal of shock worth the trip alone, she rejoined the procession of air nomads on its way to Janduri. Because her visit to the island city was part of her public agenda, the residents knew she was coming and greeted her in full force. The landing area, a small plateau in the lower hills, was surrounded by a large crowd cheering and waving ribbons of yellow and orange in coordinated patterns. Yang Chen could see directors among them exhorting their sections.
More! More enthusiasm for the Avatar!
She and her fellow airbenders landed and were immediately showered with flower petals tossed high into the air. Smiling children, no doubt selected for the honor, bade her bow low so they could drape garlands made from more flowers around her neck. Despite the grand welcome that Sidao had organized for her in advance, her minister was nowhere to be found. A demure, well-dressed man, with a scar over his eyebrow, was the only person who dared speak to her directly. He was the representative for Zongdu Chaisi, and he was happy to bring the Avatar to her, while the rest of the traveling group were provided hospitality. His name? Oh, it didn't matter. Yang Chen shared a glance with Sam Ten, the northern elder who was in charge of organizing this trip. He wasn't part of the mission. Sam Ten and the other monks were traveling like normal airbenders, and Yang Chen's presence was the aberration that had brought on this over-the-top welcome. He mouthed, "We'll be fine," right before the blast of several horns startled him off his feet. She left her animal companions with Sam Ten. Chai Si's representatives led her up a path that took them away from the main city and past the Shang compounds, nestled deep in the greenery, so only their entrances were visible. Eventually, they came to a perfectly level walkway leading to a small square house jutting out of the hillside. The Zongdu's residence was extremely plain, compared with some of the gilded gates Yang Chen saw on their way up. If she hadn't known who waited inside, she would have thought it was the home of a country doctor, or a Ba Sing Se University professor's research station. It was probably the highest walkable point on the island. The elevation gave a perfect view of the city below, letting anyone inside watch the ships come to harbor and the throngs of traders filling the exchange floor. Kavik would be down there by now, if everything had gone according to plan. She avoided staring too intently at the general area of the safe house and went inside. Chai Si's hall was crafted from exposed bare wood, treated to stay straight in the humidity.
There were two chairs and a small table in front of a desk, but no adornments to cover the walls, no freestanding ceramic pieces to fill the empty space. It was as if her office were once a training floor for bare-handed fighters and needed to be ready for its original purpose at a moment's notice. The one potential indicator of her host's personality was the massive bookshelf behind the desk. Yang Chen focused on the spines within reach of the chair. There was no organization by subject. The Pearls of Lahima, she knew those essays by heart. One of the many attempts over the generations to interpret the teachings of her people's most legendary guru. Hui Liu's 10 chapters on celestial circles and other artful mathematics. She'd read those too. Though, had it been her or another avatar? The treatise explained how to calculate the unending ratio between a circle's outside and its width by using ever-narrowing straight-sided shapes. The flame in the mind, oscillations and harmonies, an old popular layman's compilation of techniques to assist in meditation from across the four nations. It described the incense and singing bowls of the air nomads, the flickering focus candles of the fire sages, the beat of the water tribe's drums, the wire brushes used in the earth kingdom to lightly strike the limbs and unlock chi paths. There was a common interest across the world in losing oneself with the help of light and sound and the senses. Yang Chen didn't recognize the thin slip of a volume lying flat and crooked by itself, as well worn as a reference manual. The Complete Works of Shokan. Whoever this Shokan person was, they hadn't had a very long career, or perhaps they were just very concise. Her curiosity was interrupted by Chai Si entering through the far door and shuffling slowly into the room. The Zongdu of Zhanduri was only a little older than Hun She, somewhere around 30. A short woman who kept her hair and clothes plain. To Yang Chen's surprise, Chai Si was about 7 months pregnant. None of the reports she'd read about her in the last year mentioned the detail. Zongdu Chai Si, Yang Chen said, standing up to greet her. Congratulations, I didn't know you were expecting. She went over to help the older woman into one of the chairs, but Chai Si waved her away. Please, Avatar, sit. You are my guest, and I am honored by your presence. The Zongdu turned to her attendant, who had been loitering behind Yang Chen. Fetch some tea, would you? The man bowed and left. There was a momentary silence as Yang Chen waited for the inevitable request. Soon-to-be parents were some of the most ardent seekers of blessings from air nomads, a service she was happy to provide. But Chai Si didn't ask. She was content to sit calmly and let her visitor speak first. Yang Chen coughed. A false start to the conversation, her fault for assuming. She reminded herself of the plan. Act like a visiting avatar, and get out. The real work was going to come after she linked back up with Kavik at the safe house. Right now, she only needed to justify her presence. I was admiring your books, she said to ease into things. We have similar tastes, it seems. Though I haven't read any Shokan yet. Oh, but you must. Chai Si had a smooth voice, free of excess touches, much like her furnishings. He posits human beings are but surfaces, points of contact that don't exist unless we interact with others and the world around us. The only space in which a road and a wheel become relevant is the infinitely thin, ever-changing stripe where they touch. Together, the cart rolls. Negation of the self, Yang Chen said. A very air nomad concept. Chai Si nodded. He was a contemporary to your great Lahima, though he can be a little more drama-prone in his phrasing. To possess a mind, destroy it first.
Sounds like a harsher version of empty and become wind, no?
It does. What nation is he from?
Shokan? Unknown, like me. Which is probably why I'm partial to him.
Yang Chen frowned as politely as she could. I thought that Zhongdu of Zhongduri would certainly be drawn from the Fire Lord's subjects.
Yes, but that's a matter of maps more than blood, Chai Si said. I'm not really Fire Nation. Not traceably so. I grew up on a small island in the South Mozhe, the daughter of shellfish divers. No benders of any sort in the family, no clan traditions to uphold. My own ancestry remains a mystery to me, which is sad, I suppose, but common enough for those of us who come from in-between places.
She proffered a direct look into her eyes. They were hazel. You've risen to great heights, Yang Chen said. I know Chief Ouyaluk and Earth King Feishan envy Zhongduri as the jewel of the Shang system.
The attempt at flattery only got a shrug out of the Zhongdu. If there's one thing I can be proud of, it's that I've turned this city into a place that doesn't care where you were born. Opportunities are available for people from around the world. Hidebound traditions can be cast aside.
In favor of business, Yang Chen said, allowing an involuntary note of sharpness into the word.
Yes, in favor of business.
Yang Chen let the pause soak while she considered how to play the conversation. Besides relaying the request to deliver unanimity, Si Dao would have informed Chai Si about the disastrous ultimatum in Bin Er. Between then and now, would the Avatar have decided to keep threatening the Shangs by using the nearest head of state as her weapon? Or would she have seen the error in her approach? Best to fit her image. She was a young air nomad, and despite all evidence to the contrary, not a complete idiot. She would have been mortified with herself after Bin Er. She was mortified with herself.
Zhongdu Chai Si, the truth is, I have grave concerns about the nature of the Shang system itself. I don't mean to denigrate your accomplishments, but they lie atop an inherently imbalanced foundation. A small number of people reaping disproportionately to what they've sown, while more and more common folk...
Stop, I beg you, Chai Si said gently. You needn't go into every detail. I know what happened in Bin Er. Yang Chen wrung her robes, pretending to be caught out before the older, more experienced leader.
Minister Si Dao must have explained matters to you already. Why is he not here?
The question served the purpose of making her look like a child searching for the steady hand of her older advisor, but she also needed to know.
He decided to return to Bin Er after helping me prepare for your arrival, Chai Si said. Despite his short stay, I understand very well what you want. You've come here to try your message again in Zhongduri. Do I have that right?
More or less.
It is as you perceive, Yang Chen said.
Getting a Shang to part with their gold is like watering a desert.
Difficult.
Foolish.
The Zhongdu wiggled her head from side to side.
But it can be done.
I'm sorry?
It can be done. We can make the city a fairer, more balanced place.
I'm sorry, Yang Chen repeated, a flush rising in her neck. Are you talking about Zhongduri or Bin Er?
Both. Port Tugach and Taku as well, provided we're patient. The Shangs of this island will do as I say. But I don't have as much influence overseas, and old curmudgeons like Taiyin have to be talked to in a certain manner. I heard from Si Dao you made mention of historical reforms in Omashu as a template. I'm familiar with them, which would speed things up.
Yang Chen couldn't believe it.
the Zongdu of Janduri was not only giving in to the Avatar's requests, but was offering to help. She'd thrown her weight at a door and found it wasn't latched. Hope squirmed captive in her chest. She had to poke her cheek with her tongue to keep from grinning like a fool.
Your counterpart in Bin Ur wasn't quite so decisive.
Hunsha's an empty set of robes who only got his position because he looks good in front of a crowd, Chai Xi said, punctuating her assessment with a sniff. Now that the two of us have met and fallen in league, we can focus on action. The road and the wheel. Together.
Yang Chen had had it wrong the whole time. There wasn't going to be a need for skullduggery. It had simply been a matter of talking to the right person. The surface layer, the fruitful one that really mattered, was as deep as they would go. She wouldn't have to visit Earth King Fei Shan and feed him the unpleasant truths of the Shang's malfeasance. Oh, she was getting everything she wanted, wasn't she? Yang Chen had a brief sense of falling, the ground curving away from her feet. She almost said the "oh" again out loud, so jarring was the impact of landing. How did parents deal with truculent children? How did you say no without saying no? By saying yes, and simply doing nothing afterward. Chai Si had dangled compliance in front of Yang Chen, and she'd snapped it up like bait on a hook, even though she was speaking to the very woman whom Hun Shou was relying on to deliver an asset that would grant them complete impunity. The Avatar wasn't being helped. She was being handled. A squeak of the floorboards announced the attendant's return. He placed a steaming cup of tea in front of Yang Chen and served Chai Si plain hot water. Yang Chen picked up her drink, but couldn't summon the energy to bring it to her lips. She held the cup, the heat deadening her fingers.
Is something not to your liking? Chai Si asked.
No, Yang Chen said. It's just, how long do you think such reforms might take?
As long as they need to.
Good answer, if one were being pat.
Would not such a large effort, executed smoothly, take many years?
Yang Chen shook the aftermath of Tian Haishi from her head. A single night's battle. So long to see it through to the end.
I might end up having to work with one of your successors, and I don't know if they'd be as capable or committed. Might there be a plan or a loophole to keep you in your role as Zongdu past your term limits?
Chai Si's eyes flickered in the direction of her servant, who was waiting to be dismissed. Her hand drifted to her stomach.
No, she said quickly. That is one of the unbreakable rules of my position. We have to do as much as we can with the time we are given.
Yang Chen couldn't agree more.
Avatar, would you mind joining me for a short walk in the garden? Chai Si said. The tea would benefit from a longer steeping.
There was barely a distinction between the lush overgrowth of the surrounding jungle and the curated plants belonging to the property. The sweet fragrance of climbing orchids lay heavy on the nose.
Are you sure this isn't too much exertion?
Yang Chen asked as they picked their way through the gravel path. She moved aside the draping vines and hanging branches for them both. Under a tree, she noticed a pile of broken eggshells that must have come from a sizable bird, and when she looked up, she saw a platform made of planks holding a nest. Raven eagles, judging by the loose feathers.
It's good for my swelling feet. Avatar, I have to give you a bit of advice. Be careful what you say around people you haven't vetted. To wit, my servant is a spy for the Fire Lord.
Yang Chen turned her head in surprise and was swatted across the temple by dewy leaves. She had kept Si Dao on the roster, yes, but she'd never let anyone she suspected get so close to the places where she'd lived and ate. Her off-duty moments,
Her homes in the air temples, and especially the western one, were inviolable to her.
You're sure?
I'm sure. Chaisi adjusted the shoulder of her linen robe. Fire Lord Gonryu enjoys the revenue I bring him, but he has no desire to see any particular Zhongdu linger. If he believed I meant to stay in power longer than my allotted term, there would be a great deal of trouble.
I'm sorry, Yang Chen said. I can't imagine what it would be like to live your life being spied upon.
I could teach you a great many things about the experience. For now, the man is a useful instrument to make sure Fire Lord Gonryu hears what I want him to hear. Once that's no longer true, I'll dispose of him.
Yang Chen halted. What do you mean by that?
I mean, I will make him go away so completely that his own masters will wonder if he ever existed in the first place. People will take as many liberties with you as you let them, Avatar. I could teach you how to deal with such offenses appropriately.
Chaisi was still in the mindset of dealing out advice, philosophy. She saw nothing wrong with what she was saying, and she overtook Yang Qin along the path as if lost in thought.
For instance, I know ruffians tried to pelt you with stones in Bin Er, she said. Assaulting the Avatar in the street? Such a thing would never happen in Zhongdu. Disgraceful. The Wei Hunshu did nothing to find the perpetrators. If it were me, I'd have nailed their hands to their skulls so they could beg your forgiveness in the proper pose. And with the appropriate level of enthusiasm, one can easily survive such a punishment.
Chai Si took a few more steps before noticing Yang Chen wasn't following her and turned around slowly. The Avatar stared the Zhongdu down. The two of them hedged in by green bamboo. The vegetation seemed to press them closer, like gamblers urging on a pair of fighting cricket snails.
You will refrain from making awful jests in my presence, Yang Chen said.
Reveling in violence in front of her face? No. There had to be a line where the games stopped and the masks were put aside.
And you will cease any misguided beliefs you might hold that I would ever be party to such heinous deeds.
Chaisi inhaled deeply through her nose.
I have offended you. I thought a leader in your position might be receptive to discussing various strategies. Of course, my words were all hypothetical.
She bowed slightly, limited in her range of motion.
I apologize. Perhaps we should end our visit for now.
At Chai Si's plea, Yang Chen waited by the walkway while the Zhongdu went back inside to fetch something. She emerged from her house holding a slim book bound with string. The Works of Shokan.
Chai Si pressed it into Yang Chen's hands. In my childhood village, it was our custom to give honored visitors a gift of personal value upon their departure. The practice ensures a link between the host's past and the guest's future. I see you as a great avatar in the making, and I wish to be of one mind with you.
She values unanimity, Yang Chen thought, in the truest sense. The tight smiles of selected residents, manipulating image and information, an underlying threat of violence. The order of Zhongdu was dependent upon control. Hunshu with unchecked power was a callow menace, but Chai Si, unfettered. Yang Chen couldn't predict her eventual form, the marble waiting to be freed from the block, and that scared her. She had to get into the town below undercover and confirm Kavik made it in safely. From there, they could figure out how to locate the critical shipments before.
One more thing, Chai Si said. I have a message for you that came to me by mistake.
She produced a small scroll, bent and torn.
Yang Qian took it, frowning at the unlikelihood.
How did you get this?
There was a scratch on the back, and a brown dot that might have been a speck of dried blood.
I chanced upon an injured messenger hawk on the hillside. Chanduri lies underneath several flight paths, and occasionally the animals end up here when they shouldn't. They're convenient, fast, but they're not infallible. No substitute for a trusted human courier.
Yang Qian unfurled the paper and read. The message was indeed addressed to her. A few words in, and her fingers began to tremble.
From Duke Zolian of the Sawan clan, Chai Si said. I'm sorry to have read your correspondence, but I didn't know it was for the Avatar's eyes only. It sounds like things have taken a turn for the worse in Ma'inka since your last visit. I've never heard the Duke use such desperate language before.
Yang Qian wadded the scroll in her fist. She squeezed it until it burst into flames, the hot ash turning to dust against her skin. Despite her earlier rebuke of Chai Si, she had never been so close to wanting to commit premeditated violence herself.
Those poor children, Chai Si said. You can imagine how my heart goes out to them.
The Zongdu of Zhanduri stared out to sea. From her house, she could see the harbor, every ship entering and leaving her domain.
I assume you will want to make haste for Ma'inka immediately, she said to Yang Qian.
Each passing moment spent here could mean another life lost.
Chai Si smiled faintly into the breeze. And that is the one thing we cannot abide now, isn't it? The Gamble. The Avatar was supposed to check in at the safe house as soon as she could, after dropping Kavik off. He waited by puttering around the customerless inn, helping Akudan with inside chores while Tayugum went out to fish. He scouted the streets as much as he could without drawing suspicion, observing Zhanduri residents. The ones who'd lived on the island since birth spoke sentences that burst up and down like noisemakers. They doubled up words for emphasis and slung the term Sifu around as a casual greeting, a shocking use of an honorific so esteemed in the wider four nations.
Hey, Sifu! Get your broke behind out of the way of my cart!
By the middle of the third day, though, Yang Qian still hadn't shown up.
Something's wrong, Kavik said to his older teammates.
So astute of you to notice, Akudan snapped,
as testy as a father whose child had paddled out to sea in the middle of a storm. Tayugum, as Kavik had learned, was in the habit of freezing and melting and refreezing water into different strand patterns between his fingers when he was worried. The string game, but for waterbenders.
Most likely she's being watched and can't shake her tails yet, he said,
reassuring himself as much as anyone else. A crystalline net as delicate as silk glittered in his palms.
No one in their right mind would harm the Avatar.
I don't know about that.
Kavik was no historian, but he could name at least a couple of famous examples off the top of his head who'd fallen in battle. Tayugum shot him a dirty look.
You're thinking of wartime champions who went out in blazes of glory. Avatars don't get knifed in the middle of busy cities.
He distractedly dropped a loop of water, ruining one side of the bridge of frost.
To my knowledge, he muttered.
And she hasn't sent any word by hawk? Kavik asked.
Akudan shook his head.
Aerial messages tend to vanish without a trace in Zhanduri. We've never been able to rely on them for communication going to and from the island.
So they were stuck. Yang Qian was supposed to be their decision maker, the person with the final call on what moves to make.
We found a good lead on how you can get in with Chai Si's association. But the problem is the window closes tonight,
Akudan said.
The dock loaders are unhappy with their working conditions, and the flow of traffic is slowing. At some point, Chai Si is going to have to send her people in to resolve the conflict. This is the biggest bout of unrest since her term began, so she's been hiring fresh blood in preparation. He would try to join her recruitment drive.
The same story, reincarnated across the waters.
I thought there was no unrest in Janduri,
Kavik said.
You think that because Chai Si always sends her people in to resolve the conflict,
Tayugum said.
This is a chance to get right up close to the assets we're looking for.
After Kavik's briefing, they'd all agreed the docks were their best bet at intercepting the unanimity shipment.
What do you think it is?
Kavik asked, curious about their take on the matter.
Weapons? Alchemical ingredients?
Chayagum and Akudan listened to Kavik rattling off the list of possibilities he and Yang Chen had come up with on the flight over. In unison, they shook their heads.
For my mind, there's only one thing it could be,
Tayugum said.
Money. Stamped coins, raw bullion. Stacks of contracts worth huge amounts, maybe. But I'll guarantee you it's money, in one form or another.
Kavik was going to say that was an unimaginative guess, but the more he thought about it, the more it made sense. The platinum affair had thrown the world off balance, and these two men had been right there to see it happen. Enough money could buy an army or force a city to its knees. It could be moved on a boat and stored until its eventual release, an arrow loosed from a bow.
I suppose the only way we find out is if I go get recruited tonight, Kavik said. We'd just have to act without the Avatar's blessing.
Without her protection. Back at the Northern Air Temple, he'd confided in Yang Chen about the emptiness over his shoulder, the uncomfortable freedom that came when no one was watching out for you. For Kavik, it tilted the ground underneath him, pushed him along uncertain paths, lent him speed. He was used to it by now, after Kalyan had been gone for so long. You could run faster downhill, provided your feet kept up. The two older men looked unconvinced.
She would go for it, Kavik said.
He'd recognized a kindred spirit in the Avatar, right before her lemurs ruined the moment.
Granted, I don't know her as well as you do, but it feels like she would take the risk herself if she could.
Akudan grunted in resignation.
Then you know her perfectly well, he said.
Janduri at night was a red glow of lanterns, a fume of spilled drinks, a raucous, too loud conversation over spicy food. The temperatures after dark wouldn't kill you like they would in Bin Ur. In fact, the heat became almost tolerable. The residents of the city took full advantage and packed the streets, flowing from one night market to another. The meeting point for prospective recruits of the Zhongdu was set in a creaking hall, innocuously named Key Hop Merchants Association. Kavik wondered why it lay over a rotting dock, as if the occupants had to keep an arbitrary separation from the dry land of Janduri. The answer was clear once the burly enforcer let him through. Inside was a gambling den. The interior didn't have a floor so much as a series of planks laid haphazardly over bamboo struts, and the lapping water underneath the building was visible through holes big enough to fish in. Gaming tables bounced and swayed as players pounded on their tops. Now and then, a grateful winner or a loser needing a change in luck would flip a coin into one of the holes, resulting in a small splash. The place was built on wishes. Akudan and Tayugum had told him there might be some kind of trial. He was going to have to think on his toes in order to get accepted into Chai Si's confederation of runners, spies, and head kickers. A table manager glanced at him and then at the far end of the hall, where tightly placed paper screens formed a corner office. There was someone inside, and a small slat of loose weave would let the occupant peer out onto the floor while remaining hidden. The manager's glance turning into a full-blown stare gave Kavik a decent guess as to what a first test might be.
His potential employers wanted to watch him gamble. Was he an all-or-nothing type of player? A small talker? A bluffer? He spent a few minutes assessing his surroundings. A small group of motley individuals, old men all, was playing street-style pie show in the corner. But most of the floor space was dedicated to a four-person game played with elemental solitaire tiles. Kovic had never liked solitaire. Despite perfect play, sometimes he just couldn't win due to the way the pieces were stacked, and he decided not to go anywhere near this competitive version. The speed and dexterity with which the gamblers clacked their tiles said he would be eaten alive. He had some money with him, but not much, and he was pretty sure going bankrupt before the signal would mean getting tossed out from both the building and the selection process. Kovic thought about it a bit more and went over to the pie show section. He asked for a standard rules game from one of the hustling geezers and was denied until he promised to give his opponent four times the stakes if he won. But the bet would never come to completion. Unlike the fast-paced chance versions, regular pie show could be stalled out near indefinitely. Kovic sat on a stool and played like a stone wall. Ba Sing Se had nothing on his defense. He was never going to win, but neither was he going to lose. And if the candidates were selected by the last purse standing, he could sit here and let chance ruin them. He stroked his chin and contemplated the board state sagely for what seemed like an hour, until a hall-wide raffle was announced. A large wire birdcage filled with dice was brought out, and the gamblers paused their play at the tables to check slips of paper with characters written on them. Kovic looked up to see the floor manager standing over him.
Boss says go to the back.
Kovic left the pie show table over the protests of his elderly foe. A small door near the screens was open. He kept his eyes lowered, not wanting to offend the boss as he approached. He held his breath as the shadow inside shifted, and only let it out once he was through the door. He might have just passed within inches of the infamous Zongdu Chai Si. Outside was a dock barely big enough to hold Kovic and the other four candidates. A boatman pulled closer in a rowed skiff.
"You two get in," he said,
using the oar to point at Kovic and another boy about his age with a notch in his ear, like young Chen's lemur, Pick. Or was it Pak?
"You other three go back inside."
So over half of them weeded out already. The winners boarded the boat, and the losers started to protest. But the boatman pushed off against the dock pile regardless. The vessel floated away into the night, leaving those who didn't make the cut at a loss for what to do.
"How did you fare?" asked the other passenger.
Kovic had noticed him playing the elemental tile game like an expert. He tossed up a heavy purse and swiped it sideways.
"That bad, huh? I probably should have stayed back there if the Sparrow Bones tables can be cracked this easy. I doubled up at least three times."
Maybe the boss liked extreme differences in strategy. Maybe Master Lucky over here was going to be his new partner in the association. Kovic had very little to go on, but decided he would dread the thought anyway. The reflected moon guided them around the edge of the shore into a steep inlet that would have been hard to see in broad daylight. A large flat-sided building waited for them, comically crowded behind a tiny slip of beach, lamplight peeking out of a row of windows. They disembarked and stopped in front of the door where a reedy fellow, who looked more like a clerk than a guard, took note of them and scribbled on a chalk slate. Being recorded took Kovic on a swift, unpleasant journey back to the first day he stepped on the Earth Kingdom continent.
"Your little test was clever," said the other boy.
He tossed the bag of coins onto the slate, nearly making its holder drop them both.
"But I think I'm a bit more profitable than our water tribe friend here."
The man seemed confused by the money.
"What? What test?"
"You were watching us gamble over the evening, seeing which of us made the most money."
The boy jostled Kovic with his elbow. He must have noticed it, too. Tell him.
Kavik composed his features into a blank, dull stare. The boy's grin, which had started out wide as the crescent moon overhead, was now waning steadily.
Come on,
he said to Kavik, like they were in this together.
Why else would they leave us there for so long before the signal? And take only you and me if they weren't doing an evaluation?
We were late, said the boatman, and I told the others to stay behind because the skiff's not safe when it's overloaded.
The clerk had had enough.
All right, you know what, kid? Get out of here. You can have a ride back and then we never want to see you again.
He pointed at Kavik with his truck.
You stay.
But...
The boatman pressed his unwilling passenger away, using the oar.
Rude, the clerk muttered.
He fished an intricately carved wooden key out of his robes and pushed it into the door lock. Before turning it, he paused.
We were watching, he said quietly to Kavik. And we like runners who can play dumb and avoid being noticed.
The mechanism clunked into place, and the door swung open.
Welcome to the association.
Kavik was hit by a wave of sweat and fish and decaying kelp. The building had to have been a fish-drying operation at some point to explain the smell wafting from the floorboards. But now it seemed a cross between a training ground and a social club. Over by an expanse of straw mats that badly needed airing, there were sets of satchel-shaped weights, loaded exercise maces. In a different section, tables and tiles for the exact same game being played back in the gambling den had been set up, alongside rows of cots. A stove next to a wood pile. Association members could relax here, keep their muscles warm, nap. Kavik was puzzled by the setup, until he remembered his job, and the job he was pretending to seek. This place was a safe house. He'd been momentarily confused by the scale. Chai Si had a huge private building for her runners, as opposed to Akudan's tiny inn. Numerous operatives to Yang Chen's one runner. Kavik felt puny, and a little indignant on the Avatar's behalf. Right now, none of the equipment was being used. Everyone inside was gathered near a wall, 2 dozen people jeering and shouting and laughing in rapt attention. There would be an odd noise, thunk, and then a reaction from the crowd.
Gah, come on! You can call me Tail,
the man who'd let him in said.
Kavik.
Like Yang Chen said, in Janduri, he was completely clean. It was simpler not to make something up.
We pay for job, Kavik. We give you something to do, you do it, and you don't ask questions. You're lucky to be here, you understand? Boss had a good feeling about you. There's a lot of dock action going on these days, and I want a waterbender on hand.
It had been easy. But if he was in demand, he was in demand.
So you know I'm a waterbender, Kavik said.
He avoided phrasing it as a question. Tail smirked, proud of his own observation skills.
Your reactions to the sea? The moon?
You look at the water more often. It's hard to ignore a big presence of your element. Earthbenders are always glancing down more than they think, you know?
Huh. Kavik supposed that was true.
Boss likes to put people to work right away, said Tail. At sunrise we got a job for you, and whoever wins this contest we're having right now.
Tail bade Kavik come see what was happening by the wall. The two of them circled the crowd until they found a gap to watch through.
Thunk.
The sound of metal hitting home in wood. A knife-throwing competition. The two participants must have been at it for a long time, because the target, a stump turned on its side, had been gouged into a bowl. Most of the association members were rooting for the dashing, well-dressed youth who almost looked like a son of a Shang, trawling the bottom of the city for adventure. Money had certainly been placed on him. His opponent, a stocky kid in ratty sleeves who looked tense and furious even when he was waiting for his turn, had far fewer backers. A broad, wrinkled stripe of a scar ran down the middle of his forehead to his nose, as if he'd accidentally smeared acid on a sunburn instead of ointment. A hush fell over the crowd as the well-dressed boy toed the line. He held two daggers in the same hand by their points in an upside-down eight character. He wiped the sweat from his brow and ignored a heckler who claimed he was doomed to failure. With a carefully considered heave, he sent the weapons tumbling through the air. The first dagger landed home in the center of the target, followed instantly by the tip of the second burying itself in the wooden pommel of the first. An arrow split, but with knives, and on the same toss, no less. The onlookers burst into cheers, a once-in-a-lifetime sight. But the noise died down as soon as the scarred boy stormed up to the line, gripping his knives the exact same way, presumably to match the feet. He didn't seem to think it was a big deal. A waste of a throw, really.
"Come on, Jujinta," someone shouted. "Just forfeit the match. Some of us have places to be."
Jujinta spotted Tail and called out to him in a nasal, squeaky voice.
"You said if I lose, Shigoro here gets my spot on the next job, right?"
"That's what I said," Tail replied.
Jujinta cracked his neck and gave his next move some thought. Without warning, he stabbed the meat of his opponent's throwing shoulder with one of his daggers, leaving the blade stuck there. Shigoro screamed and dropped to the floor.
"I lose,"
Jujinta said to Tail over the shock of the crowd and the cries of pain filling the hall.
"But I don't think he's gonna be employable for a while."
"Can't argue with that logic."
Tail turned to Kavik and slapped him on the back.
"Meet your new partner. I'm sure the two of you will make a great team."
Legitimate business. From above, Mainka always looked like a fish's head to young Chen. Open-mouthed, goggling, bisected from the rest of the body. She could relate. One of the eastern islands in the volcanic chain making up the Fire Nation, Mainka belonged to the Sawan clan. An old, proud Fire Nation lineage dating back to pre-unification history. Her immediate predecessor, Avatar Sato, had skillfully managed the Sawan and their rival noble houses during a time of deep crisis in his homeland, and tempered ancient feuds into a lasting peace. Yang Chen thought she had lived up to Sito's legacy with a victory of her own the last time she was in Mainka. The message to her that Chai Si had intercepted had proven otherwise. She circled the carved spires of Duke Zolian's stone manor and landed between moss-draped walls and a reflecting pool that was developing a green skin on top. Her greeting by the servants was somber. They told her that while the Duke had been informed of the Avatar's arrival the instant they spotted her bison in the air, he was still finishing some business with the clan elders. She would have to wait. For a brief moment, Yang Chen wondered how future generations would look upon an air Avatar challenging a Fire Nation noble to an Agni Kai. She'd win, too. She was pretty certain of it. After calming down, Yang Chen left Nu Jian with the stable hands and was led inside the ancestral seat of the Sawan. In Zolian's private study, Yang Chen sat by herself, drank smoked tea, and swallowed her misgivings. She'd made the gamble to drop everything and come here instead of meeting with Kavik like she'd promised. Trying to make contact at the safe house before traveling to Mainka was an option, yes. But Chai Si's vantage point from the peak of Jandori, plus the watchers she surely put on Yang Chen after their conversation, meant sneaking back into the city would have been a long and laborious process. Time was of the essence here. She had to hope Kavik possessed enough sense to lie low with Akudan and Tayagum until she returned to Jandori. The door opened, and Duke Zolian entered. He'd lost weight since their last meeting, and his beard was grayer. Behind him was his heir and much younger cousin, Lohi, who held a large carved box in his arms. A gift. She was going to receive a gift to make it all better. The two men bowed deeply.
Avatar, Zolian said, his voice cracking with relief. You got our message. Thank the spirits you got our...
Shut up, Yang Chen snapped. She'd shown all the tact in the world on her first visit, but circumstances were different now. Shut up, shut up, shut up! Her command hung in the air. Until further notice. They waited dutifully, heads hung. Their shame a testament to how badly they'd erred, and how desperately they still needed her. She must have seemed like she was drawing the moment out to exert her power. But really, Yang Chen couldn't find any words. She tripped over every sentence in her head.
You only had to do one thing, Yang Chen said, eloquence nowhere to be found. It was working. It was working, and you... All you had to do was uphold your end of the bargain. You only had to do one thing, and you mucked it up.
Control over her loudness also gone. She wondered why they weren't talking, until she remembered she'd specifically ordered it.
Speak!
Avatar.
Lohi shifted the weight of the box that Yang Chen still refused to acknowledge.
I understand you must be disappointed, but please let us explain.
What is there to explain? No human was to set foot within 3 li of the cavern edges. Did we not set up boundary warnings? Did we not communicate the terms to the assembled family heads before I left? There's nothing to explain.
This should have been one of the most straightforward of matters for an avatar. One of her most basic duties. An easy victory, even. The Sawan had asked her for help, dealing with unseen forces causing damage along the edges of their villages, and she'd given it. After interpreting the will of the spirits, she informed their human neighbors that in order to end the troubles, they'd have to keep their distance from the cenotes dotting the island and leave what looked like perfectly good arable land untouched. Settlements were pulled back, the destruction of the sinkholes ceased, and balance had crept into Ma'inka. Delicate, but real. Those efforts had been wasted. Duke Zolian's chin trembled. It didn't matter that he couldn't bring himself to speak. There were only so many answers to choose from. We didn't think the rule applied to everyone. We broke the rule by accident and nothing bad happened immediately, so we figured it was fine. We didn't think you were serious. We thought the problem had eventually gone away by itself. We realized in retrospect that we just didn't care about anything other than what we wanted in the moment. Yang Chen had heard so many variations on the underlying melody, but it was all the same song. You have hamstrung my ability to help you again. Give me a reason why I shouldn't leave right now and let you face the spirits on your own this time. The threat surprised her as it slipped out. She wouldn't abandon people in need. So then why did she say it? Why did it feel good to imagine flying away, leaving them behind to plead with the sky? Here, Zolian was ready with an answer.
Our children, he said. It is as we wrote to you. The Phoenix Eel Spirits have... They've done something to our children. A curse. Across the island, Sawan youth are not waking up from their slumber. They will waste away if we do nothing. Every healer we've consulted says the sickness is born of the spirit, not the body, Lohi said. I know you may not believe us, but we could take you to a hospital, show you the effects.
No!
They were confused by her violent refusal. Avatar Yang Chen was known for healing the sick with her own two hands. It was arguably the image of her the Four Nations liked best. It was true she had treated many gruesome injuries and illnesses, seen the worst kind of physical damage. But to look upon a wasting dream, the peaceful form of a body damaged in spirit? No.
She couldn't subject herself to that. Not after what happened to Jetson.
I believe you, Yang Chen said. There is nothing to prove.
Zolian knelt and touched his head to the floor.
I beg you not to let them suffer for our misdeeds. Please, Avatar, negotiate with the spirits on our behalf once more. We will honor the outcome, honor you for an eternity.
Lohi stepped forward with the box.
We have collected a penance from our clan to show our sincerity.
He opened the lid and showed her the contents. When Yang Chen realized what the dark lumps inside were, she had to avert her eyes. Piled in the box, like the organs of a slaughtered animal, were bundles of human hair. Judging from the jeweled and gilded pins intentionally left in them, the top ranks of the Saowan clan had all undertaken the ritual of dishonor. The meaning, the weight of that harvest, heaped upon Yang Chen's neck, making her dizzy and nauseous. They'd wanted to move her. They couldn't have imagined how successful they'd be. She had been the Fire Nation scores of times over, held her honor in the highest esteem, and lost it on a few occasions. The fact applied here as much as it did underneath the floorboards of the Bin Er Gathering Hall. Yang Chen staggered backward and caught herself on her chair.
Get that away from me, she said. Close the lid.
With everything weighing on her, she could not afford to lose control in front of the leaders of a major Fire Nation clan. She fought back the heaves running through her gut. She swallowed and swallowed until the danger passed. The act of willpower was not a moment to be proud of. Brute suppression had a cost. Her body and mind were sure to pay the price later, with interest. Zolian and Lohi took her shudders as acceptance of the gesture. Of course the benevolent and loving air nomad would be moved.
There are only two more additions to be made, Lohi said.
He put the box aside, drew a blade from his waist, and knelt beside his elder. Yang Chen and Lohi left Zolian recovering in a chair with the help of his servants, a damp cloth draped over his eyes. The display of shame had worked. The Avatar had acquiesced, but the mental strain of losing his topknot had rendered the Duke incapable of further discussion. The younger Saowan had needed only a minute to collect himself before offering to show Yang Chen out. They walked through a hallway, exposed to an open courtyard on one side, patches of moisture seeping through joints in the stonework overhead. The manor had a temple-like construction, its ancient architect no doubt influenced by the strong link between the Saowan clan and the Fire Sages. Lohi's hand drifted upward toward his shorn patch only once, to check in disbelief that his hair wasn't still sitting on his head, before he snatched it back down and kept his fist balled at his side.
My clan would have me beg your forgiveness, he said. We needed as much land as we could plant. In lean times, every acre counts.
Lohi had proven to be sensible the last time Yang Chen was in Ma'inka, someone she could work with. He surely recognized how weak the excuses coming out of his mouth sounded.
We did try other measures before contacting you again.
Lohi gestured toward an empty alcove as they walked by.
The family treasures. Some of them were sacrificed on pyres to no avail. The rest had to be liquidated to feed our retainers. Straits are dire, Avatar.
They didn't have to be. That was the most frustrating part. Neither Yang Chen nor the spirits had demanded a complete beggaring of the Saowan.
Indeed. Your initial message was delivered impeccably. It was our stubborn ears that refused to open.
Yang Chen remembered the original council among the family heads when she explained the demands of the spirits.
The elders had hemmed and hawed instead of nodding, and when Zolian announced they would comply, several pairs of eyes had glanced at each other instead of their clan leader. "My duke was unable to keep some of the branch houses from defying the contract," Lohi said. "He is a good man, but occasionally soft when it comes to his family. When it is my turn to lead the Sawan, I promise you I will enforce unanimity within my clan." A mere coincidence in his choice of words, and yet Yang Chen had to struggle not to scream. A servant brought her staff. She was going to have to fly fast. "Tell me something," she said, once she and Lohi were alone again. "The family heads who broke the agreement, would they have listened the first time if I'd told them the treaty was the word of Avatar Sito himself and not mine? If I'd told them I'd communed with his spirit beforehand, and the terms were simply what he commanded me to put down on paper?" She'd thought of the tactic after her flop in Bin Ur. Too late to help her there, and long after her first attempt to assist the Sawan. Speaking with the voice of her past life, the respected elder statesman could have helped her cause in front of Tei Yin and Noehi. It certainly wouldn't have hurt. But in the Fire Nation, Sito's name was a sledgehammer. Had she trotted it out, her decree to stay away from the sacred cenotes would have landed upon the Sawan with the force of a mother, a father, a Sifu, the Fire Lord, all rolled into one. She could have leveraged her predecessor's credibility, provided she was willing to acknowledge she had none herself. Lohi's pause was all the answer she needed.
"Did you?" he asked. "Did you talk to Sito?"
Yang Chen frowned, snapped the wings of her glider open, and took off. The dispute. She wasn't going to take Nu Jian to the largest cenote. Her companion could get jittery around spirits these days, and had every right to be, after the old iron incident. Yang Chen flew over the humid jungles of Ma'inka on her glider, pushing the winds as hard as she could. She spotted a clearing in the trees and landed on a woven floor of roots. It was necessary to proceed on foot for the last part of the journey, let herself be vulnerable, or else she risked flying back and forth over her destination, wondering why she wasn't seeing anything out of the ordinary. Sunbeams combed through the tree trunks. She could hear chittering insects and screaming birds. The smell of life was also the smell of decay. Overwhelming rot and fertility attacking through her nose. Yang Chen stepped from stone to stone and fallen branch to fallen branch. There was no such thing as a straight path under the canopy. She avoided using her staff for balance. The end would sink into the damp soil and ruin the tail fins. Her disturbances sent squirrel toads hopping in circles. Several of them decided to follow along and keep pace. Leaves fell from overhead. She looked up to see monkey marmots trailing her through the trees. "Shoo," she said. The furry creatures, reminiscent of lemurs, blinked and waggled their head tufts. Yang Chen sighed. Animals were often drawn to her for no discernible reason. It was how she'd ended up with Pick and Pock. People envied her for it, but there were drawbacks. The other children had cried on bonding day when most of the bison calves flocked to Yang Chen instead of distributing themselves equitably. She had to flee with Nu Jin before she ended up with a whole herd of companions instead of just one. After a half hour of walking, she encountered the problem. The true reason why she was here. A large plot of land had been cleared by slashing and burning. Inside the Swidden was an encampment constructed on top of bamboo piles, giving it the thin-legged appearance of Jandori in miniature. A network of sluice chutes sprouted outward from the village center. They led to nowhere. No vessels for containment, and had the slurry inside not dried up since the camp's evacuation, it would have spilled in waves over the jungle floor. By following the chutes, she found the last piece of evidence. A derrick topped by a pulley. The setup for a drop drill. A blunt force mechanism to smash away at the earth with an iron bit until substances that should have been deep and buried could be sucked to the surface. Either the rig had to be abandoned too quickly to hide, or the owners hadn't bothered at all, thinking she wouldn't know what it was if she discovered it. Air nomads had no use for such devices after all. Somewhere along the chain of communication, from the disobedient branch families to Zolian and Lohi to her, the truth had been twisted. This wasn't a farming plot. This was an excavation zone. The affronted phoenix eels had made their displeasure clear. The longhouses and bamboo scaffolds had been crushed in several places, narrow stripes of destruction that looked like they could have been caused by falling trees. But there was nothing in the wreckage except for great splashes of acidic discoloration, extending from the broken buildings to the vegetation around them. Channels of dead vines and unnaturally yellowed shrubs led deeper into the forest. Young Chen shuddered. The village was a scar crossed out by another scar. She exited the clearing on the other side in more ways than one. Her animal followers did not come along. One of the first signs the encampment marked a boundary. The start of a new country where the common laws of reality binding the four nations loosened their grip. At her presence, the sour wind through the branches made a low moan, the kind that began in a throat. Her eyes burned with unchecked sweat running down her shaven head. The forest no longer spoke with animalistic chirps and howls, but in the fluttering of tongues and whispers of nonsense much too close to language for comfort. Yang Chen knew at this point, turning around and heading straight back would not take her to the camp, or to the Sawan Manor, or to any human land at all. Tendrils of unknown plants drifted around her knees, as if she were walking along the floor of the ocean. She ignored their slimy touch, the way they sometimes closed tight, just missing ensnaring her legs as she walked. Off to her left stalked a presence, a shadow out of the corner of her eye, long-limbed and muscled, like a puma goat. It was at least 20 feet tall. She dared not look at it directly and slowed down to let it cross her path. Once it had gone, she saw giant handprints left behind, shaped like a human's, down to the palm lines. After more walking, she came to the edge of a hole a mile wide, the center so dark and deep it tugged on her throat and made the level ground under her feet feel like a slope, down, down into the emptiness. A great fall waited without the relief of an impact. Little egg. With her weight on her heels so she wouldn't topple forward, Yang Chen called out,
I am here. We must talk.
Spirals of water rose out of the hole, winding higher like ivy. The liquid took on color and definition, grew a beard of beaks underneath a face full of glowing red eyes. The phoenix eels. A braid of competing heads and thoughts, only unified when wronged. And they were unified before Yang Chen. The first time she visited these spirits on behalf of the Sawan, they had not darkened to such an extent. They resembled animals from the physical world, glowing with energy, sunbeams full of dust. Back then, the phoenix eels had snapped the piles of encroaching settlements, flooded portions of fields, carried off heads of livestock. Their sole intent was to warn humans off portions of Mainka. Their actions almost mischievous. Negotiating with them was still possible. Under the terms the Avatar brokered, the spirits got what they wanted. To a degree. The humans got to expand, a little. No side was fully happy. An outcome Yang Chen could live with. But evidently, some members of Zolian's family could not. Now the Phoenix Eels had only punishment in their hearts. Yang Chen felt the anger and hatred emanating from their forms, hot as coals, stoked by betrayal. Spirits were not humans who could watch an act of bad faith and figure they would get theirs back in the future. They were sharpened rails, signs before the cliff drop, harsh tutors who swatted your hand the moment your brushstroke swayed. Parents always forgot the lessons they told their own children.
Don't touch that flower or you'll be pricked by the thorns. That's just what happens. If you don't like it, don't touch it.
Stay away from those woods or the spirits will take you. That's just what will happen.
The Phoenix Eels undulated and coiled, dripping water down shimmering scales. Snakes curled before they struck too.
Hollow shell. Little egg with no yolk inside. We know why you are here.
If you know why I am here, then release the children from their sickness.
She dares. Against her own word, she dares. A monstrous beak came rushing at Yang Chen, snapping shut in front of her face. It was too large, filled too much of her vision for her to react with the proper fright. But had she been standing a foot closer, she would have lost her nose. She blinked slowly, one of the few shows she was allowed, while her heart bounced up and down. The price they exacted for losing control could vary beyond comprehension. The Phoenix Eels understood why she was being silent.
You come with nothing. You stand on nothing.
True. This was an escape attempt by the Sawan, a go at the most human of follies, trying to avoid consequences.
The people who broke their promise have displayed a willingness to atone. They have shown their dishonor.
No penance. What can be forgotten with time? We will feast on their eternal regret. They will watch their line come to ruin.
The statement was a statement. The facts, not a ploy to get more from Yang Chen. The spirits began to descend, slithering back into the abyss. Out of desperation, she dredged up her first success, if the destruction of a city could be called that.
Old Iron listened, she shouted, and in return he received perpetual obeisance.
We are not Old Iron, came the scream. We do not love. We do not relent.
The slithering coils stopped their descent. Rage kept them from leaving the table. They would hurt Yang Chen now for offending them. But at least they hadn't disappeared. A wall of red eyes lowered before hers. The Phoenix Eels still had features conceivable in the human realm, which meant there was a remnant of light in them yet. She could detect the flickering shadow of the fully darkened form it might take. A spherical cluster of beaks and fins, unable to choose a direction to exist in. For now, though, there was still hope. As long as she was willing to suffer their punishment. Yang Chen steadied herself. A wispy tendril of the spirit, smoke made life, touched her on the forehead where the arrow point was. The pain did not take the form she expected. Instead of suffering, she saw. She saw wandering shadows, threaded in a weft of agony. Human beings staggering in base, groaning lowness. Wounds, all of them self-inflicted, spilling from lips and ravaging lungs like burning, choking chyme. They cried out to the mist, and there was no answer. No substance for an echo to bounce off. Everything was malleable in the spirit world, including point of view. Yang Chen had seen through so many eyes before. She'd been jarred from place and time into her past lives, locked into shackles made of moments long gone. This was different. With the help of powerful spirits, she had been granted a different person's perspective for once. Jetsons. The tendril withdrew back into the phoenix eels. Yang Chen was on all fours, as prostrate before them as Zolian before her. She slammed the bottom of her fist repeatedly against the stone ground, as if pounding a heartbeat back into her own chest.
Let her go! Let her go!
We do not have her. Nothing has her. Nothingness has her. Do you like your gift? It is what she sees and will see forever.
It was an illusion. It had to be. Jetson was dead. Yang Chen had been there when her heart stopped beating. The wall of scales before her began to move in opposing directions. The phoenix eels were uncoiling to depart. Yang Chen could barely think straight, let alone remember why she had come here. Her ragged mind leaped between every plea, every prayer.
Wait, she cried. The children of the Sawan, they're not punishment enough.
The spirits came to a stop, intrigued.
What you want is a truer humiliation, isn't it?
Yang Chen said.
Let the children sleep to death, and their parents' grief will burn out in a lifetime. There are other, better ways to exact a toll. A lasting toll.
This was no longer a negotiation, but the doctor, fetching a hot iron to burn a spurting artery, closed. She was going to have to harm the Sawan in order to save them.
Let us talk about inflicting pain, little egg,
the phoenix eel said.
Together.
When it was done, Yang Chen found herself standing by the edge of a stone cavern in the ground, large but not mind-bogglingly vast. Healthy green vines dangled down the sides, pointing at blue water clear enough to see through. The bottom of the cenote was jagged with rock formations, but otherwise empty. The physical world had become predominant once more. It might stay that way, depending on the Sawan's reaction to the new she-boar. Her glider lay on a flat-topped boulder, placed like an offering. Spirits could be as cheeky as humans sometimes. Yang Chen opened the wings to inspect them for water damage. She found none, and took off immediately for the manor. Lohi had the decency to wait for her return himself. He was the lone figure in the manor's courtyard by the edge of a waterless fountain. The sun was fading, but that meant little for determining how much time had passed.
How long was I gone?
Yang Chen asked him. She examined his face for signs of aging, a precaution less ridiculous than it sounded.
What day is it?
When Lohi gave her the answer, Yang Chen swore under her breath. If she left Ma'inga now, she'd be more than 3 days late for her check-in with Kavik by the time she reached Chanduri. Still, she'd gotten as lucky as she could.
There hadn't been a leap of weeks or months, as reported by some unfortunate storytellers who'd wandered between worlds.
"The children will be released from their illness," she said, "provided more conditions are met."
Lohi shuddered in relief.
"I'm glad the spirits accepted our sacrifice. This was a devastating blow to our clan's honor, but with time, we may put this unpleasantness—"
"You may not regrow your hair for 50 years.
"Behind us. I'm sorry, did you say 50 years?
500 moons, to be exact. That is how long the spirits of your island declared you must hold your dishonor. You do not get to reset the scales after a single act of penance. And there's more."
While Lohi was still caught up in his initial shock, Yang Chen listed the taboos the Sao-1 would have to observe in order to appease the phoenix eels. Some of them inconveniences, others serious hits to their coffers, or quirks of behavior that would most certainly exclude them from the rituals and celebrations of power in the Fire Nation. Lohi reeled as if she were kicking him in the stomach with each decree.
"We'll be humiliated for a generation," he cried in sheer disbelief. "We'll never be able to contend at court. Our rivals will dance on our heads. You were supposed to fix this."
Forgotten were the children. Lohi's hands curled into shapes that once fully formed could lead to regret.
"You can't do this to us."
He took a step forward he didn't need to take. There it was. The calm young man who would likely describe himself as the most rational member of his clan had turned into a slighted bundle of raw nerves. Yang Chen sliced downward with her hand, and the weight of the sky dropped on his back, forcing him to halt and stoop. She leaned down and spoke directly into his ear, so he could hear her over the rushing wind.
"I have done nothing to you. We arrived here through your clan's actions. You were in control the whole time, and you can undo the bargain in an instant. Simply violate the boundary again. Let me know what form a twice-betrayed spirit takes."
Yang Chen led up the torrent. While his face was still lowered, Lohi took a deep gulp of still air and composed himself. He rose, wearing an apologetic mask.
"Forgive me, Avatar. It's just unbearable to think about. The Sao-1 will be much diminished.
But the next generation will live. With enough time, they might flourish. Is that not worth it?"
Yang Chen would have to swallow a dose of humility herself.
"You have lost the melon," she said, pulling out a proverb. "Hang on to the sesame. No?"
The spark of recognition flickered in Lohi's eyes. It was an obscure saying of Avatar Sito's, not often heard outside the Fire Nation. Sugaring the choice with her predecessor's wisdom would make it more palatable.
"I will talk to the other clan leaders," Lohi said. "It will be the most difficult task of my life, but I will talk to them."
Difficult. She wanted to laugh. Would he fault the members of his family, who thought they had impunity, went against their word and angered the spirits? Or would he lay the blame at Yang Chen's feet? She knew which option was more convenient, and convenience ruled kings and peasants alike. Yang Chen asked to be shown to her bison. She had to get out of here and check on Kavik. The more she thought about it, the less likely it was that a boy who would wriggle through a block of sheer ice and follow a strange girl to the other side of the world would be the type to sit quietly and not get into any trouble. Nujian waited for her in an outdoor pen, surrounded by stable hands. Yang Chen dismissed Lohi and the attendants. Neither she nor the young nobleman in the mood for a formal farewell. It occurred to her that he'd waited for her alone, not out of any sense of personal duty, but so he could control her message to his clan. She leaped onto Nujian's withers and heard a crinkle. Padding underneath her,
She found a piece of paper, folded into an envelope, but without a seal. She frowned and looked around before opening it.
"Greetings, Avatar. Chai Si here."
Yang Chen sprang to her feet on top of the saddle. She spun on her toes, searching the grassy field again for watchers. She had been gone long enough for a hawk to travel from Zhangduri to Ma'inka, and long enough that anyone could have planted the letter, even Lohi himself. The Zhongdu, who did not trust birds, had no qualms about violating her own rules. She wanted to crumple and toss the paper out of spite, to veer away from what was undoubtedly another carefully planned manipulation by Chai Si. But that would have accomplished nothing. She read further.
"Given our new partnership in charity, I'm hoping we can be less formal with each other. By now, you will either have solved the Saowan's spiritual problems or let them drink fully of the bitterness they concocted for themselves. If you're wondering how I know the full story, well, it's amazing what you can learn about someone if you hold their debts. I would wager you found a perfect solution.
Avatar, because I believe in you, and I am not alone in that faith. Why, the other day, I met a boy from Bin Er, seeking employment from me. He believed in you a great deal as well, right up to the very end of our conversation." The bottom dropped out of Yang Chen's stomach. "Kavik,
I told you once that I could teach you how to deal with spies. The first step is catching them. Do you know the best way to catch a spy, Avatar?"
The first half of a koan. But all koans were taunts to some extent. The enlightened mocking the uninitiated. Chai Si's faint smile of victory was stamped all over the answer to this one.
"You open your door and invite them in."
Loose ends. After taking their wounded compatriot away for medical attention, the association members drifted in and out of the building, mostly out, until very few were left. The ones who remained refused to talk to Jujinta, and by extension, Jujinta's brand new partner. Kavik didn't mind. Thanks to Kalyan, he knew what an inherited shunning felt like. What he was less comfortable with was having to watch Jujinta's post-victory ritual, which started with deep, fervent prayer to some unknown spirit. The knife thrower scratched a series of marks into the wall, triangles upon cross marks upon straight lines, until an intricate geometric pattern emerged that somewhat resembled a bird spreading its wings. Kneeling in front of it, he whispered to himself, eyes closed, his mutters sounding like angry condemnations of some past unforgivable crime, far worse than the light stabbing he'd given Shigoro. "Well, that's not creepy at all," Kavik thought. When Jujinta was finished, he came over and sat down on the same bench Kavik was on. Even the way the guy rested was disturbing. He sat as if the back wall would contaminate him by touch, and stared straight ahead the whole time, barely blinking. It would have been perfect meditation posture had it not looked like his muscles were fighting each other in a vicious stalemate. After a while, the silence became too much. "You a bender?" Kavik asked him. It wasn't idle conversation. If things went Shigoro-shaped between them, Kavik wanted to know if he would need to deal with surprise fire. Hiding your ability was a common enough ploy in the errand-running business, useful for temporary advantages. "Ha-ha, secret bender out of nowhere!" And Jujinta's impeccable blade skills would have been the perfect distraction. People could be good at two things. Jujinta frowned, having understood the logic behind the question. And he didn't like it at all, being pried into. Not one bit. "No," he snarled without turning his head. He could have been lying, but Kavik felt his body language told true. He thought the matter settled,
until after a whole minute, the Fire National retorted.
You anything but?
Kavik squinted at his benchmate. Well, nuts to you too, buddy. Tail came over to interrupt the slow-moving exchange.
It's time.
There's been enough light for an hour already, Kavik said. His knees were stiff from sitting so long.
Yeah, but we need the currents going the right way, too. Or else you'll be ground up by the limpet's teeth and spat back onto the beaches. Come on.
The older man led Jujinta and Kavik toward the back of the hall. A sweet, meaty stink, even more powerful than the default fishiness, crept through this end of the building. A washed-up land animal rotting overnight. There was an intestinal rankness, not born of the sea, lying somewhere underneath. Tail pushed open a wide set of doors, letting the new daylight in over a small gravel beach.
Here's your first job, he said. Disposal duty.
Kavik shielded his eyes from the sun at first, but quickly switched his hands, clamping his mouth shut. Hot bile leaked past his fingers. Laid on a bed of seaweed, next to silvery fish too ugly and oily to sell, were a pair of dead bodies, beginning to bloat. One of them was Chiu. Kavik's mad scramble only lasted a few paces before he emptied his stomach over the surf-polished pebbles. He had the distinct sensation of people other than Tail parting way for him to be sick. A few of them chuckled.
First time with a raw corpse, huh?
Someone said, not unkindly.
It'll get you for sure.
Kavik clutched his midsection and spat and spat and spun around. Seeing the bottoms of Chiu's swelling purple feet made him retch again. Why was he, his body here? Why wasn't he in Taku?
Everyone here has just seen the persons named Kavik and Jujinta get on a boat with a fellow dressed like a high official from the Earth Kingdom and a youth with pockmarked skin wearing the latest fashion from Bin-Ur and go on a voyage,
Tail announced.
Only Jujinta and Kavik came back. There must have been foul play. We'll testify as such, should authorities from outside Jandori come asking.
Tail rubbed an itchy eye.
New guy. This is how we keep you loyal. Guilt by association. Be glad we respect the law in these parts. I've heard the real unsavory criminal-type groups in the Earth Kingdom force their new members to foul the play themselves. What did these two do to get so unlucky?
Jujinta asked, unperturbed.
They're spies. And if there's one thing the boss does not like, it's spies.
Tail went in for a closer look at the Earth Kingdom official. Kavik couldn't comprehend how he managed not to gag. He lifted the man's drooping foot-long beard and let it fall again.
He's the real deal, a sage. This other one.
He nudged Cho's body with his foot, and Kavik felt the toe in his own ribs.
Is a broker coming bearing gifts way too big for his worth? That's the surest way to tell someone's a plant attempt.
The envelope. The envelope he'd stolen from the Avatar's room. Kavik had put the cause of Cho's death into his own hands.
Come on, get him into the boat before you miss your window, Tail said. You want to be rowing with the tides, not against them.
Kavik had to be prodded toward Cho's head. Jujinta squatted down and grabbed the body by the ankles, rolling up the salt-eaten trousers to get a better grip on the clammy gray flesh underneath.
Lift with your knees, he grunted.
Far, far away over the horizon. That was where Kavik had to send his mind in order not to begin shrieking uncontrollably when he took Chiu by the wrists and his former broker's dead fingers flopped in reciprocation around his own. He barely looked away in time to avoid Cho's head lolling backward to accuse him of murder with slack open jaws. He dipped in and out of coherence.
He was vaguely aware of two thuds hitting the bottom of a skiff. And then he and Jujinta were out to sea, each of them rowing an oar.
"So what you're going to do is encase the corpses in a block of sea ice," he heard Jujinta say. "We push the ice and let it float away. By the time it melts, the current will have taken it to a shark squid feeding ground, and there won't be any remains left to identify."
Kavik hadn't remembered Tail giving them instructions. They must have gone over them while he was wrapped in blankness. Or maybe his partner already knew how to dispose of murder victims. It was easier to freeze water around Cho and the other man, new best friends in burial, once he got some momentum going. He could pretend he was layering ice upon ice. The foot sticking out, he quickly covered. There was no kernel to the mass if he couldn't see it. As the little icebergs drifted away, Jujinta prayed again. The rest of the job passed like the sun behind clouds, rowing back to shore, Tail telling them they did good and they should report for more work next week. Jujinta's stare drilling into Kavik's back as he navigated from one end of the gambling parlor to the other. That's where this fever dream had begun, right? A gambling parlor? Kavik was no longer sure. He staggered home in broad daylight past the wet market. The sound of cleavers thwacking into their bloody blocks made him want to throw up again. On the boat, Jujinta had offered to do some knife work. To make the pieces smaller, that's why Tail had sent them both. But Kavik at least had the wherewithal to refuse any more indignities upon the deceased. No, not home exactly. The safe house. Muscle memory developed in Bin Ur kept him from breaking cover and taking the most direct route. He remembered to pause every so often and sweep for tails. When he burst through the inn doors, surprising Akudan and Tayagum, he could say with confidence he hadn't been followed. Once he regained the ability to string a sentence together. The Avatar was waiting for him. By the looks of it, she'd just beat him there, maybe by minutes. Her disguise lay in a pile, a cloak and a wide hat, a simpler get-up than the one in Bin Ur, put together in haste. She sprang to her feet when she saw him. "You're alive," she said, looking utterly relieved. The fact that she had reason to believe otherwise only made him angrier. They'd talked about the dangers of this mission. Kavik had agreed to them. But right now, a flood of blame was dammed behind his throat. Unable to speak, he leveled a trembling, accusing finger at Yang Chen and discovered there was an object in his hand. A small coin purse he didn't have before. His payment for dumping Cho into the water.